Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Welcome in to another edition of the Jayhawk Talk Podcast post-season episode. We are talking episode number 51. I am Kevin, joined with me as always my podcast co-host Andrew. How you doing, Andrew?
Doing pretty good, Kevin. Not feeling great after yesterday's game, but good to see Wiggins finally walk on water. Is that the right word?
I think so.
I think he walked on water yesterday, so I think we're going to be feeling fairly good heading into the postseason. But Kevin, we are now into the 50s, and I've got a 51 little nugget for you.
Okay.
I was going to say, okay, Andrew Wiggins, 41 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists. That equals 51.
That's a stretch.
Not quite. But this is what I'm going to do. 1951 KU basketball team had a player named Dean Smith. And so we're going to look at the statistics for Dean Smith from 1951.
Okay.
He basically was Christian Garrett on the team. He had 2 free throw makes.
That's pretty good.
And so I just want to tell you, Christian Garrett, Nico Roberts, who score 1 point a season. Dean Smith grew up to be pretty successful.
True story.
So, you know, Dean Smith, 1951. Now his 52 and 53 seasons were a little bit better. Not tons, but a little bit better. But there you go, 1951. But let's talk about the current Jayhawks.
Okay.
Give us a little table of contents, Kevin.
Sure. Today we're gonna talk just a tiny bit about West Virginia because it was kind of an interesting game. There are some stories from that. Obviously, Andrew Wiggins will come up a little bit. We're gonna give out our own version of the Big 12 awards. I think we're gonna do a better job than the coaches did today, which were released this Sunday. We're recording on a Sunday, and then Andrew, we're gonna be joined by our good pal Brian Haney, formerly of Rock Chalk Sports Talk, and currently the Texas Tech voice of the radio voice of Texas Tech. He knows his Big 12 pretty well. So he's going to help us preview the Big 12 tournament as well. So a big show. I think I'm excited. I know we obviously came off a loss, but I don't know. My spirits are high. I think it was just a combination of the way we came back and Wiggins and that it didn't really matter too much, and postseason basketball being here, and it's nice outside, like all these things. I'm feeling all right.
You know, it's feeling like March, feeling like spring. We definitely need a little bit of that spring fever going on in order to get us through, because so far, 1-2 in March, not kind of where we want to be. But let's talk a little bit about West Virginia.
First, Andrew.
Let's talk about Johnny's Tavern.
There you go.
You know what? Okay, so Johnny's Tavern in Prairie Village, not Prairie Village, in Power and Light, is going to be crazy this next week with the Big 12 tournament going on across the street. So you might as well go in, have some buffalo chicken dip.
Mm-hmm. Maybe some espinaca with a side of salsa.
That's if how you we feel roll. Like it. Yeah.
Some pizza, because pizza's pretty good. And we will certainly be down there. So if you are down in the Power and Light and you are out and about, be sure to tweet at Jayhawk Talk and at Naismith Drive, or I'm sorry, not Naismith Drive, at Sherlock Hoops. I forgot you changed your handle. And we will be down there. And if you catch up with us, maybe we'll buy you a beer or something, $9 beer at one of those fine places there at Power and Light. But hopefully at Johnny's, where certainly it will be hopping. It's going to be a lot of fun. So come on down. And certainly watch the rest of the games throughout the tournament at Johnny's Tavern's 9 area locations. It will be a hopping place, certainly for KU games as well. Okay, Andrew, let's talk about West Virginia.
Put us on a timer. We don't want to talk about it too much.
Okay, like 5 or 10 minutes top? 5 minutes.
Let's keep a minimum here. Embiid really was lacking, or Embiid not being there really showed up yesterday. West Virginia shot 53% from the field. And you know, that 53% is a little misleading because they didn't shoot well down the stretch, because there was a point that they were shooting 70 on a consistent basis. Like in the middle of the first half to basically middle of the second half, they could not miss. And that was quite discouraging.
Yeah.
Got us all the way down to a 25-point deficit. We got out-rebounded 37-31 by a team that really never out-rebounds anybody, that we destroyed in rebounding when we played them at Allen Fieldhouse. We should note that Joel Embiid, while he was not in Morgantown, he got another opinion on his back. Did he do some traveling for that, Kevin?
Yeah, I think he flew to California today and supposedly is seeing a specialist first thing in the morning. And so hopefully we'll know something tomorrow about the status of his back going into the Big 12 tournament. If let's say, Andrew, that it's not a big deal, but the doctor says, you know, I think you'll be a lot better in about a week. If you rest another week, you got to leave him out, right?
I don't know. That's a tough question. I would want to know more about the injury.
Yeah, it's tough to speculate.
You just don't know. But I don't know. Something to keep an eye on as we get up closer to the Big 12 tournament. But that's all the negative stuff behind us. There was a bright shining spot, and that was Andrew Wiggins led a pretty epic comeback that, while it did come up short, showed quite a bit about this team.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to watch. I mean, it was obviously, I think everyone was pretty sure the game was over after getting down 25 early in the second half. But, you know, it was kind of interesting what Self said after the game. He wanted to put his competitive team in the game. And what he meant by that was, I don't necessarily want the five best players on the court. I want the biggest competitors, the guys who are going to scratch and get us back in the game. I thought that was an interesting way to put it. And Andrew Wiggins was certainly a part of that. He was unconscious there for a while. I think he made 15 straight points for KU. And I don't really know why anybody else was shooting the ball in that second half because he was on fire and it was a lot of fun to watch. And obviously the best thing that came out of the game, was him certainly, feeling like he's got a lot of confidence coming into the postseason play.
I think you're right. You talk about this competitive team. Obviously, we saw guys out there like Andrew Wiggins, Seldon for the most part. You saw Brandon Green a lot. You saw Frank Camp a lot.
Mason.
But someone we didn't see was Nadir Tharp. He ended up in the game with 16 minutes, 0 assists, 1 turnover. Really no impact on the game.
No, and you could tell right away at the beginning of the game that Self, you know, he sat him right off the bat because, and it was defensively, just, you know, he lost his guy, made a quick three, did it again, lost his guy. And it was on the defensive side that I think Self was the most upset with him. But yeah, he didn't impact the game at all when he was out there. It was really frustrating to watch. And then pretty interesting still, though, that Self sat him the whole game pretty much. I mean, he played 16 minutes, but those were not really relevant 16 minutes. I mean, he set whenever it was an interesting part of the game, he was not in there. And I don't know about you, but I think it's a little late in the season to be sending a message to somebody.
I think you're right.
But at the same time, I think Self legitimately thought this wasn't a message. This was the team that we need to trot out there to try to get back in this game. And that's what scares you a little bit.
Maybe that's true, but I think that Nadir needed to be out there at the end.
I agree.
Mason made some good plays. I mean, he hit those threes at the end that, you know, were very crucial. But, you know, he was out there making freshman mistakes in the last 5 minutes with a couple of those turnovers. And that's not necessarily, you know, you do blame it on him, but it's not unexpected because those were freshman mistakes. You know, dribbling into the lane when there wasn't any space to go. You know, a couple other of those turnovers. Those are just freshman mistakes, and I think that Nadir, we've said this before, and I think we've said this for 2 years, stretching back 2 seasons, that if we're going to be clicking, if we're going to be the best team we can be, we got to go as far as Nadir's can take us. We can go as far as Nadir can take us. And, you know, in Morgantown, we did not go very far. But let's go on to some statistics real quick. And really, this category, this segment is all about Andrew Wiggins. He led KU in every major category. 41 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 5 steals, 4 blocks. I liked his blocks, Kevin.
Yeah,
they were fun. They were a lot of perimeter-based blocks and in spots on the floor that you don't see a lot of blocks.
He showed off his athleticism more yesterday than he maybe has in any game. I mean, That steal on the inbounds and the dunk, that was just so gross. Nobody can do that. I mean, it was just he's incredible.
But let's go on to a few other things. It's the second most points scored by a freshman in Big 12 history, and that of course is behind Michael Beasley. But it beats Ben McLemore from last year for the KU record for most points. Most points since downtown Terry Brown scored 42 in 1991. And most points scored by a KU player in a loss. Very interesting. He's now 74 points shy of McLemore's freshman scoring record. And just another guy of note, Perry Ellis, 14-5 in 25 minutes. You know, that's fine. At the beginning of the game, it seemed like he could get anything he wanted. But, you know, it's with Perry, I think it's just steady.
Yeah.
You know, that's not an inspiring number. You know, 14-5, that's fine. But maybe on a day when we needed more.
Yeah, I think we're gonna need 14 out of him most games to, you know, to be comfortable in winning. Because I think we're gonna get points from Wiggins, and hopefully, you know, someone else steps up, whether it's Nadir or Wayne or Embiid, hopefully. But Perry, like you said, he's that rock that you're gonna hope you get 14 or 15 out of every game. And when you don't, we've seen the numbers. When he's under double figures, we're not a very good team. And that, I think there is certainly a relationship between those two things. So we need him to play well. We need him to be himself, I guess is maybe the best way to put it. And if he's himself, at least we got that going for us. Let's talk about the player of the game, which is going to be a very short segment.
Here's the three. I'm telling you, he's in the zone right now.
I think you could put a blindfold on him.
Andrew Wiggins. Okay, let's move on. How about the WTF of the game? All right, Andrew, there's certainly a lot of options here, but Nadir Tharp probably is a big one because we're used to being able to have him out there. He's supposed to be a leader of the team, and he wasn't. Is that probably your answer, too?
I think I'm going to go with the whole team defense.
That's fair.
Defensively, because it wasn't just on Nadir. They were making shots, but we were letting them make the shots that they wanted to take. So while they didn't miss, we didn't do anything to get in their way. I mean, this was the most points given up by a KU team this season. I think it was the most points given up in a half. Everything went wrong defensively, not just on Nadir here. So I want to give it the just team defensively. That's my WTF of the game.
I think that's a good one. Real quick before we move on, are you concerned at all about point guard play? I mean, we've kind of touched on this a lot this season, and I think both of us have kind of ridden the fence a little bit on this issue. I mean, noting that we like Tharp, you know, when he's on, and then I think, you know, we have enough to maybe overcome bad point guard play sometimes. What are your thoughts going into the tournament right now?
I just think you have to realize that that's our weakness. That's our weak spot. And that if we're going to get, you know, knocked off somewhere, that's going to be probably one of the reasons why.
Well, you just
got to acknowledge that. You just got to acknowledge that that's what it is.
I mean, KU fans know, because it's pretty fresh in our memories, what a bad point guard play in a big game in March can do. Obviously, last year with Elijah not playing well down the stretch of that game and really struggling versus Michigan against a really good point guard. If we face another really good point guard, I mean, I'm probably a little afraid. But the good news is we do have some decent perimeter defenders in Wiggins and Seldon, and, you know, worst case scenario, we can do some switching and maybe get someone else to guard their best point guard. But yeah, I'm a little concerned. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not feeling great about that. But the good news is we have two NBA starters on our team right now. Hopefully, if Embiid's healthy, we can overcome some of that. Let's talk about the Floor Burns player of the game.
You cannot hope or wish good things to happen. You go make them because we are in attack mode for the entire 40 minutes. We do that, and we're going to have a fun locker room in about 2.5 hours.
This is kind of tough for me because, like you mentioned, there was a lot of not great effort out there overall, but maybe give it to someone who was on the court during the comeback. Jamari was out there a lot during that time, 6 points, seven boards, had a couple of big energy plays where we were able to get them to turn it over and get some points. So I guess I'll go with him, although he did miss a couple of very key free throws. Who you got?
I think that when we came up with this category, it was to recognize someone who wasn't necessarily going to be the player of the game.
Right.
I'm throwing that out the window because I'm going to give it to Andrew Wiggins.
Okay.
Based on just one play, the steal inbound dunk.
Yeah.
Performance. Just that one. That one play. I'm just going to give him the Floor Burns thing just based on that.
Well, I was thinking Jamari too because of the nasty block, where okay.
I mean that's good.
Where Tarik missed the dunk or got fouled or whatever, and then Jamari sprints the court and blocks an alley-oop off the backboard, which I don't think I've ever seen.
That was fun. Yeah, that was good.
That was pretty cool. But anyway, well, let's get rid of this West Virginia game. I don't think it really happened. We're not going to talk about it anymore. It's certainly a flash in the pan compared to what we are about to talk about, and that is postseason basketball. And to do so, I think we ought to bring in our man, Brian Haney, who is waiting on the line. I'm going to patch him in. We will be right back with Brian. Did you realize that you were a champion in their eyes? Yes, I did. So I packed it up and brought it back to the crib. Just a little. All right, we are back, and we are joined by Brian Haney, voice of the Texas Tech Red Raiders. He was on the show a couple weeks ago previewing Texas Tech with me, and we had to have him back on because he is a Big 12 aficionado, and certainly happy to have him join us today. How you doing, Brian?
Doing great, Kevin. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Absolutely. Well, we wanted to talk about, first off, the Big 12 awards that came out today. These are voted on by the coaches. The AP voters will be released tomorrow, I believe. But let's just run through some of these. I wanted to get your thoughts, Brian, and Andrew, you too, on some of the actual awards. So let's start with the first team All Big 12. The actual five guys we have is Wiggins, Edgem, Kane, Smart, and Statton. Brian, what do you think of that team?
It's actually exactly what I had a couple of weeks ago when I sat down to try and forecast the finish to the season and what I thought should be right. At the time, the question I had was, can you realistically put Marcus Smart on the list when his own, for lack of a better term, knuckleheadedness cost his team three games and ultimately a shot at competing within the league when they were co-favorites at the beginning of it? But the answer I came up with when I sat down to do it was, yes, you can, because quite honestly, his stats in all the other categories are that good. Big 12 leader in terms of steals. He's a guy that's right up there in assists and scoring as well. And even though some could question whether or not he played as well in the portion of the league schedule compared to the non-con and what we saw from the start of the season, I still think you're talking about the number three scorer in the league. You're talking about a guy who affects the game on both ends of the floor. I mean, when he came back, his first 2 weeks back off the suspension, he was averaging five steals a game, and they hadn't lost until Saturday up in Ames. So you add in some of the assist numbers, and to me, Marcus Smart was a smart choice to put on there as a fifth guy. I had no problem with Staten on there because all year long, he was just killing it from the point guard position. Nobody wanted to face West Virginia because you're talking about the guy that finished with the best scoring average in Big 12 play and the best assist total. And so to me, Juwan Staten absolutely justified, and actually that scoring stat is for all games, not just conference games. So to me, even though his team finished lower in the pecking order, he was just such a stud. Led in the league in minutes played as well, and just so many categories in which assist turnover ratio, points and assists, you had to give him the nod. And I thought DeAndre Kane at times this year was on a comparable level in terms of affecting the game, and he could fill the stat sheet about as well as Marcus Smart did. You add in Andrew Wiggins and Melvin Edgem, who in my mind were the two guys competing for Big 12 Player of the Year. And when it's all said and done, I think those were a pretty rock-solid top five. You draw a line in the sand there, then you start talking about some of the other guys like Buddy Hield, Joel Embiid, Marcus Foster, that were absolutely first-team worthy at different points and times within the schedule. But ultimately, I think for various reasons, there was a clear line to be drawn after those first five, and I think the coaches got it right.
And what do you think, Andrew?
I really think over the course of the Big 12, those five players are probably the best five players in the conference. The only little nitpicky thing I have about it is Andrew Wiggins is the tallest player on that five. So for, I mean, you're not necessarily picking, you know, a center, two forwards and two guards, but you pick, you have two forwards in Wiggins and Edgerman, and then three, you know, small point guard guys. In terms of construction, maybe it could have been a little different in rewarding, you know, a true post player, but otherwise I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Andrew, but at the same time, when I started looking at it as well, I actually really like this first team, all Big 12, and I'm with both of you. I think they got it right, and I'm glad that they didn't do the whole, you know, you got to have a center and two forwards or whatever, because there's times when you're not able to reward a player when they go that route. So I think they got this right. We should also mention that Joel Embiid was on the second team, all Big 12. Ellis was on the third team, and Seldon and Tharp were mentioned as honorable mention. Let's move on to Big 12 Player of the Year. And this one got a reaction on Twitter from KU fans. And this was obviously Melvin Edgem who got the nod. And I think most people thought it was down to him and Wiggins. What do you think of the choice there, Brian?
You know, I think it all comes down to how much weight do you put on team success and then taking the best player from the best team. How much more, when you factor out your criteria and what you're placing emphasis on, you put into that boat? Because clearly, you know, Wiggins was the most productive guy on the best team in the league, and yet he doesn't win the award. When you look at it from a scoring, rebound, and field goal percentage, and double-double standpoint and all that, I can see the case to be made for Edgem. Just look at Big 12 stats, only 18 points per game. You can point to the fact that he's second best in rebounding at 9 per game, just 4/10 of a board behind Ryan Spangler from winning that category as well. He was tops in the league in field goal percentage at 51. And so you go on down the line with all these categories, and obviously a very compelling case can be made. Folks might say, well, there were a couple of games where Wiggins maybe drifted in and out of the spotlight and wasn't that focal point, but he improved his shooting numbers and his scoring dramatically from non-con play to Big 12 play. And then there were games when Edgem did the same, when he kind of faded in and out. I think what sticks in a lot of the voters' minds is 48 points versus TCU. Of course, we just saw 41 out of Wiggins on Saturday in Morgantown. But I don't have a huge problem with it, and yet at the same time, I can understand why Kansas fans would, given the fact that Iowa State was swept in the season series by KU, and obviously it was Wiggins that hoisted the Big 12 trophy, not Iowa State and Melvin Edgem.
What do you got, Andrew?
I think, you know, in different circumstances, Wiggins' stats could go up, you know, but I don't think that necessarily a Bill Self offense is designed to win a lot of individual awards. And you know, Wiggins is probably the highest candidate for getting one of those. But, you know, if he's on a different team, you know, those numbers are up maybe just a little bit, and he can be competitive statistically with those guys. So I don't think we can be incredibly disappointed, because it's kind of by design that, you know, we share the wealth a little bit more. So I don't think anybody should be mad, but he definitely would have had my vote.
Yeah, I think that it was close, and I don't really have a problem with it either. And I think that, like you said, Brian, it really comes down to those who are looking at box scores and those who are looking at maybe someone also that just is just a better player, maybe passes the eye test a little more or impacts a game in ways that no one else possibly can. And I think if you're looking at it that way, it's hard not to give it to Wiggins. But at the same time, I think the numbers certainly give Edgem a compelling edge. So I don't really have a problem with that. But the next one is an interesting one. And let's talk about the Big 12 Coach of the Year going to Rick Barnes. I'm going to start with you again, Brian. What did you think of this selection?
Tell you what, had Self and the Jayhawks won on Saturday in Morgantown, and I realize what you're thinking. You're thinking, come on, Brian, the Big 12 title was already sewn up. But had they won that game, coupled with Rick Barnes' loss at Texas Tech, I think a really compelling case could have been made for Bill Self, and it still could be. I mean, the guy wins the league for the 10th consecutive year, and he does so with so many freshmen and underclassmen on this team. If that's not worth something, I don't know what is. But you have those that, when they vote for this particular category, they only look at one thing. Where were you predicted to finish in the preseason, and where did you finish when it was all said and done, and how many spots did you climb? And so it's difficult when the preseason co-favorite wins it to get the credit that they deserve in the minds of some that only look at the fact that, well, Texas was tied for second heading into the final day and had a chance to move as high as six spots. They didn't, but they were in contention to, and that's what they look at there. I do think Rick Barnes is deserving when you consider the fact that his seat was very hot in the preseason. A lot of folks talking about, man, could this be the year that Mack Brown, Rick Barnes, and Augie Garrido all wind up saying their farewells on campus down there in Austin, and couldn't be farther from the truth. He starts up a new NCAA tournament streak after a 17-year streak was snapped, and he is deserving of that honor. But to me, in my mind, how I vote on it, I don't just look at the job you did over the course of those 18 games. I look at what you did year-round in terms of recruiting and bringing talent into the league, then developing that talent and getting the most out of those players. And so in my mind, based on the job Bill Self did of all of that for the full 12 months, 365 days, he's every bit as worthy as Rick Barnes was. And then a tip of the cap, and this is not a homer pick, I think this is statistically backed, to give Tubby Smith, the coach that I work for, a nod here in consideration as well. Tech hadn't won six Big 12 conference games since 2008. They doubled their Big 12 win total from a year ago. And as Kansas fans saw in the game down here in Lubbock, not so much the game up in Lawrence, but the game down here in West Texas, the Red Raiders were in every game they played with two exceptions and held late leads in numerous games that they wound up losing. So I think for a team that was picked ninth, even though that's where they finished, to shave 15 points off the loss margin and to be a threat almost every night out, regardless of venue, I think Tubby Smith's got to be on that short list as well.
That's fair. What about you, Andrew?
Well, I think the short list in this conversation isn't very short, because I think that everyone has some sort of argument to be, you know, on this list, except for Scott Drew, Travis Ford, and Trent Johnson. I think everyone else could theoretically have gotten a vote or should be in consideration. I mean, Lon Kruger, no one is really talking about, but, you know, took his team to second in the league, going to get the second seed in the Big 12 tournament, and really was kind of an afterthought coming into this Big 12 season. You know, they're predicted around the middle of the pack. No one really thought of them as a threat. And then, of course, Hoiberg and everybody else. I mean, with Rick Barnes, you know, bringing his team up, I think everyone has a legitimate argument, including, you know, Tubby Smith down there. I mean, he's certainly got that team on the right track. He may be your candidate for winning it next year, you know, because he's got the upward trajectory with this team.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, Andrew. I think there's a lot of really good coaches in this league. I think we figured that out pretty early on, and it really just showed this year, all year long. But, you know, at the same time, it's, to me, I'm kind of with Brian. I don't think the award should go to the most overachieving coach of the year, because they call it the most overachieving coach of the year award. And I think that's a lot of people vote. And in that case, I do understand the vote for Barnes. But, you know, on the release, they say Rick Barnes, you know, lost his four leading scorers and came back and did this. Well, you know, Bill Self lost five guys. He's all, you know, all five starters. And I think it kind of shows, like you said, Brian, that you look at preseason projections, you look at the team that KU had coming in. And I think it just goes to show a lot of coaches thought that they could win with that team too. And I don't necessarily think that's always going to be the case. And I think Bill Self certainly was deserving there, but I don't have a big problem with Barnes.
But I've got one question.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Before we move on, just a question for both of you. 2009 was the year that Bill Self was widely recognized with every Big 12 and every national head coaching award possible. And that was the year that, you know, everybody left from the championship year, the year before, a whole new starting five, and, you know, went on to win the Big 12 and get a three seed in the tournament. Very comparable to this year, but what was a better coaching job? His National Coach of the Year in 2009 or this year, 2014?
Wow, that's a terrific question. What were they, 27-8 that year? Obviously didn't have the postseason success that they wanted to after losing to Michigan State in the Sweet 16. But, yeah, replacing all those studs, what, five NBA draft picks, and you get this team right back in the Big 12 championship winner's circle, and had a chance to take down Tom Izzo's Spartans there in Indianapolis. Good question. I think it sounds like a cop-out, but the jury's still out on this one until we see what they do in Kansas City and specifically beyond that before we really put a bow and a wrap on it. Obviously, you know, he has two potential top three NBA draft picks he's coaching here. It was a talented team, too, with Sharon Collins coming back as well. So I'm going to reserve judgment for about three more weeks, hopefully four more weeks, and then we'll fully weigh in on that one.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Brian, although at the same time, you look at this team and you do have the number one and number two draft picks on most people's boards. So I almost lean to this year being the second, but I agree. The story is yet to be written. It'll be interesting. I hope that, you know, like Brian said, we're talking about this in 4 weeks and the answer is pretty easy. Okay. So let's talk about the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. Cause I thought this one was maybe one of the more interesting awards. It went to Joel Embiid, and I don't know if he's the best defender or best Defensive Player of the Year on Kansas's team. Brian, what was your thoughts with Embiid getting the nod there?
Well, let me hear your take first. Who would you have given it to instead?
I just, when you watch Andrew Wiggins play defense, I mean, all the defensive numbers back it up. Like, he is incredible on defense. I mean, he does things that no one else can do. And I mean, Embiid's great, but it's blocks. I mean, it is the threat of you know, coming in and getting blocked. And I think there's a huge advantage to that, and not many teams have that. So I guess that makes sense that he would get the nod there. And I think centers usually get this, you know, this this award, unless your name's Aaron Kraft. So I don't know. I don't know if Embiid maybe was the most deserving of it. I can't think of a lot of people that maybe were more deserving. So I guess I get it, but I don't know. I'm not as crazy about it as maybe some of the other ones.
No, I hear you. And obviously, you know, Marcus Smart with those steals numbers I mentioned, because he can turn defense into offense so quickly with the transition opportunities off the steals, would be in consideration as well. Isaiah Austin was the best block shot guy in the league, but you talked about a guy who could disappear from some games. So he did not quite have the sophomore season with what folks were forecasting for him back in the summertime when he first announced he was coming back. Embiid averages 2.6 blocks a game in league play. He breaks Eric Chenoweth's freshman blocks record at KU. And to me, it's not just the actual plays that resulted in blocks, as you kind of alluded to. It's the number of shots you alter and how you affect shots on that end of the floor, even when you don't actually contact the ball. To me, he was as good as anybody in affecting the opposition and what they were trying to do. And to have an eraser like that on the back line is a weapon that not many teams in the country have. So I had no problem with the pick, but like you, I think there's other awards that probably I feel more solid about.
Andrew?
You got to remember that this specific award is voted on by the Big 12 coaches. And, you know, it could be the information directors or whoever else. But, you know, theoretically, this is voted on by the coaches. And I think that when you're picking a Defensive Player of the Year, I think that in their head, they're not going to look at statistics. They're not going to look at whatever else. They're going to make it their decision based on who is the player who frustrated us the most. Who do we have trouble against the most on offense? And I think that when you use that criteria, I think Joel Embiid's kind of the obvious choice. But I do agree with you that Andrew Wiggins is probably, you know, bar none, the best defensive player for the Jayhawks. But I think when you consider about who's voting and why they're voting and how they're voting, got to be Embiid.
I'll buy that. Let's move on to the Big 12 Freshman of the Year. This can be a short discussion because I think most people agreed Andrew Wiggins was the winner of the award. There were certainly a lot of good freshmen in the league this year. So, I mean, it wasn't necessarily as easy as a lot of people thought, but maybe coming into the season. But I think Wiggins is most deserving. Brian?
Yeah, sixth in scoring in Big 12 play. He's a top 15 rebounder. So many things he does to affect the game on the defensive end. Top 7 in field goal percentage. No argument there. If he was a near miss for the player of the year, certainly he could have this one locked up. But tip of the cap to Marcus Foster, Isaiah Taylor, some of these guys at K-State and Texas that didn't have the magazine covers or the ink in the preseason that other players did, because they were every bit as important to their respective teams. Maybe their seasons cumulatively weren't as impressive overall, but boy, oh boy, did those guys ever come out of the woodwork. And really says a lot about the future of this league that there's so many talented freshmen and sophomores that I fully expect to come back. Maybe not Wiggins, but some of these other guys are going to be good for a long, long time to come within the Big 12.
Andrew?
I think so, too. I don't have much to add. But
fair enough. Yeah, there's not much to talk about here. We kind of covered Wiggins enough.
If anyone wants to know my opinion on Andrew Wiggins, you can just listen to our entire library of podcasts.
Fair enough. Especially from when he committed and you were just a big fan of him because his name was Andrew, too.
That's right.
Okay, so Big 12 newcomer of the year. I think this one was a pretty easy choice, too. No real reason to get too much into this one. DeAndre Kane, obviously, is the fifth-year guy coming in and just, you know, was a beast. I mean, he was really, really good. And I think probably even, you know, rised above expectations anybody had of him. Brian, what do you think of Kane's year?
Yeah, if you look at conference stats only, he was the third best scorer and actually edged the overall assist totals there of Juwan Staten. So I like the assist to turnover ratio, looks really good as well. And Fred Hoiberg continues to knock it out of the park with these fifth-year transfers that come in and play right away. It's turning into transfer U, and he's had terrific success with that.
Andrew, anything to add on Kane?
You know, he was a guy that you kind of heard of at the beginning of the year, and when they started playing those initial games, you know, you kind of realized, okay, Hoiberg's done it again, got one of these guys going. And I anticipated he would be good, but I didn't anticipate that he would be, you know, for a while there, a candidate for a National Player of the Year. This was back in January when everybody was talking about him like that. Certainly deserving of this award, though. And he's going to be tough for people, you know, in Kansas City this weekend and in the tournament.
Yeah, it should be fun to watch his career. I'm interested to see what's next for him. You know, coming into Iowa State, is that enough, what he's done this year, just to, you know, to catapult into an NBA career? And if so, I mean, Iowa State definitely becomes transfer U. So that will be interesting to see.
Yeah. One thing to remember about him, though, he is 24 years old.
Right.
Like, I don't know how he stretched it out that far with prep schools, with transfer stuff, but it's going to be tough for an NBA team to take him. He's not quite a Cameron Wheaton like in the NFL, but certainly a guy to keep an eye on.
Definitely. All right, well, let's skip the Big 12 Sixth Man Award because I don't really want to spend a lot of time on it. Tyler Neal and Phil Forte split that one, but I want to get to the Big 12 All-Defensive Team, and this one was interesting. This is one I had a little beef with. It was named Austin, Embiid, Smart, Holland, Ridley, and Staten were all named to the team. And this was the one where I was like, where's Wiggins at? Because just watching him, and you'd think that the coaches, you know, when we put our guy, our best player on their best player and can shut people down, that I just thought he might deserve a spot on this team. What did you think of this team and maybe whether Wiggins deserved a spot there, Brian?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, with only five spots to give, I guess I can understand why there will be omissions, whether it's Wiggins or somebody else like Buddy Hield, who was amongst the steals leaders, number two on the list in league play. But, yeah, I think a lot of what you see there is statistically based. I mentioned Isaiah Austin averaged almost 3.2 blocks per game in league play, and Ridley was right behind Embiid for third on the list, over two a night. And Texas, one of those teams with all that length, not just with Ridley, but Prince eBay, and one of the best shot-blocking teams you'll find in the country, let alone the Big 12 Conference. So I think a lot of that's statistically based, and I can understand why in picking five they went with those five. But like any list, you're going to have an omission, and in this case, I think you hit the nail on the head.
Andrew, anything to add there?
Just real quick, if you look at the composition of this list as well, it's three centers and three guards on this list. Just kind of a weird recognition of who's good defensively. You know, no forwards recognized. You know, and three centers. It kind of just is what we're recognizing certain statistics. You know, in the player of the year, we're recognizing point scoring. We're recognizing steals, and we're recognizing block shots. And that's certainly true with Cameron Ridley, Joel Embiid, and Isaiah Austin. So I think it just comes down to people look at those statistics. You look at these defensive statistics, you put them on this team. You look at these offensive statistics, you put them on the player of the year. So would I like to see that change a little bit? Maybe. It's not a big deal, but just something that kind of sticks out to me.
Yeah, it makes you wonder how many SIDs are voting, just looking at media guides and box scores. But
A lot of SIDs actually sit down with the coach and they tag team it. I don't know how all those dialogues go, but I know sometimes it's the combination of the two. And I've seen that first.
That's interesting. Well, yeah, this is why we have you on, Brian, so you can make me sound like I don't know what I'm talking about, which I don't.
No. I was actually confirming with you that they're very involved in the process, but sometimes it's going back and forth with the coach, and they kind of decide together.
That's cool. Well, thank you. Yeah, that's something I didn't know. That's kind of interesting. I wonder if you don't mind, expanding on that. So when this comes up, did KU's SID just goes up to Bill Self and says, "Hey, we got to vote on these things. Do you have any suggestions off the top, or should I just name some players and tell me what you think?" Like, I wonder how that goes.
Yeah, it's a good question. And obviously these SIDs who write the game notes and do a terrific job in coming up with these juicy statistical nuggets to offer up, they have that statistical-based analysis that they can present to the coach and highlight a certain number of guys on the list that come to mind, and the coach can kind of point out of the list of six or seven of the toughest ones that they found most difficult to defend or who hurt them the most in particular. Some of these coaches, though, are so organized that they rattle off the five off the top of their head, and I'm sure for your audience there, Bill Self's one of those guys. I know Tubby Smith had his picked out in his mind when he sat down with his SID, so it is interesting, and I'm sure it varies by the school, but I think you get a little bit of both when they sit down to do this.
Very cool. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the AP awards, which I believe come out tomorrow. Is that right, Brian?
I think so, yep.
Okay, absolutely. So we'll certainly watch those. Broadcaster
awards are coming up too.
Right on. Well, we'll certainly see if any of these things change between the coaches and the AP. Now, Brian, I don't want you to feel like you have to jump into this next part, because we don't want you to have to put your name on the Jayhawk Talk Awards, which are some of the awards that we came up with that we thought the Big 12 should continue to give awards out. But if they don't do it, then we will. And that is, we're going to start with the Kim English Hated Player of the Year Award. In the preseason, Andrew, you and I said Marcus Smart. Do you still agree with that pick?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we were right.
that's a dead on correct pick.
We don't get a lot of things right, Andrew, but I think we got that one right pretty well.
I think it's like the 96 Bulls. Like, okay, a lot of people are picking, Jordan's back. I'll pick them to win the championship, but then no one expected them to have the greatest season ever.
Right.
This is true with Smart, where, we picked Smart. He's coming back. We kind of hate him, but no one expected him to do this.
The most hated
turn
season
into
ever.
The flop all-star and going into the crowd pushing people. So I'm just going to say, we called this one dead on.
We said, though, right after or right during the suspension when it was going on, that this was a comeback story just waiting to be written. And I'll be damned if he has not made an incredible comeback story possible. Brian mentioned it earlier, and we'll bring you back on here, Brian, if you want to talk about it for a second. But he's averaging like 4 points more and two assists more and two steals more since the suspension. And obviously they've rattled off a number of wins to get probably off the bubble at this point and back into the field. What do you think of the way that he's come back?
Yeah, he's been really dialed in, and the rest of his team is feeding off of him right now. And I still have concerns long-term in terms of making a deep run in the NCAA without a stopper on the back line in terms of a post player. But right now, like I said, the way he turns defense into offense, the way he's setting up some of these other guys and all the attention he commands and demands on the offensive end right now, it's made that team so much more formidable. I don't think anybody wants to have any part to do with them, and that would be a potential draw for Kansas in the second round there of the Big 12 tournament. And I know from a Texas Tech perspective down here, to let you in on our dialogue yesterday when we're tracking scores and all that, we didn't want any part of that matchup, at least from a broadcast perspective. I don't know about Tubby, but would have much rather had the matchup with Scott Drew's team or possibly West Virginia, because clearly they've been cooking with gas ever since he came back.
Yep. That is an interesting 8 seed in the Big 12 tournament, and potentially an 8 seed in the 8 or 9 in the tournament, in the NCAA tournament, which could really give some 1 seed some trouble if that's the case. But anyway, let's move on to the our next esteemed award, and this is of course the Scott Drew Douchey Coach of the Year Award. In the preseason, Andrew, you and I had a split between Scott Drew and Travis Ford, and I don't know quite where you land, so I'm going to give you the floor here. Who is your who should get the award this year?
I don't remember who I picked. Do you have it written down who I picked?
I don't. I know
that
we split. I'm
gonna go with Travis Ford, and I think he won the award during his press conference following the Marcus Smart pushing incident. I think that if you want to see your Heisman moment, I think that's the moment.
I am 100% in agreement with you. Scott Drew hasn't annoyed me this year at all. He hasn't done anything to annoy me. It helps that KU certainly had no big problems with Baylor this year, so that was nice. And we may not and probably won't see them in the Big 12 tournament. So I'm going to go ahead and go with Travis Ford as well. Here's one of my favorite awards, the Keaton Page Annoying White Guy Award. And in the preseason, Andrew, we had a split between Brady Heslip and Phil Forte. Who's your guy this year?
Well, I think the other awards, like, you don't necessarily want to win them. But if you're a white guy on a different team, like if I was a white guy on a different team and I won this award, I'd kind of take it with some pride.
Absolutely.
Because this usually means that I hit a bunch of threes against the Jayhawks and the fans now hate me. This is, of course, going back to Keaton Page. But, you know,
and
Brady Heslip.
Every little white guy that's annoyed.
You know, it's Heslip and Forte are the obvious choices. But, you know, there's a handful of other ones. I think I'm going to go with Forte, though. Just because we lost in Stillwater, and he didn't even have a particularly great game. But that's why I'm giving it to him.
So far, we are in agreement. We are moving on to the Travis Ford Underachieving Team of the Year Award. This is a new award that we came out with this year. I think there are two obvious answers here, Baylor or Oklahoma State. I hate that Oklahoma State is sweeping the awards, but at this point, I think it's pretty easy to give it to Oklahoma State. What about you?
I think so, too. It was neck and neck between those two teams. Is every nominee between Baylor and Oklahoma State in this?
It won't be in the last one. So okay. We got one coming up.
Okay, I'm going with Oklahoma State, but you know what? They could still do well in the Big 12 tournament and in the NCAA. But, you know, we're giving this out now. Still applicable. But let's move on.
All right, and the last one, the Hoiberg Overachieving Team of the Year Award. I think there are several candidates here. Iowa State was certainly very good. I don't even know if you can call it overachieving because they probably ended up about where most people expected them to be. But they were certainly a top 10 team for a while. Oklahoma is another example of a team that could jump up there. Texas and maybe even Texas Tech. What is your thoughts on the Overachieving Team of the Year Award?
I've got to give it to OU because they're not winning anything else. You know, Buddy Hield was a second teamer. Cameron Clark was a third teamer. And really, that's all they got. And this is the second team that plays second in the Big 12, a team that did a lot better than people expected them to. So sorry, OU, for not winning any of the Big 12 awards, but you can certainly win the Fred Hoiberg Overachieving Team of the Year Award from the Jayhawk Talk podcast.
I like that too. So far we've been in agreement. So let's, I got to say, Spangler was not a part of the Annoying White Guy Award this year, but he could have been because he was a force. He was fun to watch, kind of an energy guy and a big transfer for them, a big part of why they are the Overachieving Team of the Year Award from the Jayhawk Talk podcast. Okay, we're going to bring Brian back. I'm sorry about that, Brian. Trust me, we're going to give a little disclaimer that you had nothing to do with any of those.
Very entertaining stuff, though. Absolutely.
You had nothing to do with any of that. Brian's name is not a part of any of the Jayhawk Talk awards. So that's certainly not going to be forwarded to your employer for any reason. But let's talk about this Big 12 tournament because it starts in just a couple of days. We got the bracket now. People are starting to fill it out and get a little taste of postseason basketball. So I just wanted to get started really to talk about the seeds, talk about the potential games Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then kind of what to watch for. So let me just run through real quickly the first game on Wednesday, the 8-9 game, and this will be Oklahoma State versus Bryan's Texas Tech Red Raiders. That game will be at 7 p.m. And then the 9:30 game is Baylor TCU, and that's the 7:10 game. So okay, that first game, Brian, I wanted to get your thoughts. You know, obviously Oklahoma State will probably be favored in the game, but Texas Tech is playing really well right now. I'm interested to see what you think of that game.
Yeah, you know, you look at these two previous matchups, and obviously Tech had Oklahoma State's number, the fourth loss in the midst of their seven-game slide, and it was a lower-scoring affair. They held them to a season-low points that game with Tubby Smith's grinded out, shortened the game with lower possession totals and all that by killing clock type of mode. And I would expect something similar here. Yeah, the big concern, obviously, is how Tech matches up athletically with some of these Cowboys in the one-on-one matchups. And then they played up in Stillwater. Jay Crockett was not even close to 100%. He was probably sub 80% with the knee tendonitis. And we saw a completely different Jay on Saturday on Senior Day here in Lubbock when he went for 22-10 in the win over Texas. So I would expect a great plan from Tubby Smith. I would expect an improved effort out of Texas Tech. And I think they can give these Cowboys a challenge. But clearly, both teams will be motivated, perhaps Oklahoma State the most motivated, as they want to, you know, lock up that NCAA invite and enhance their positioning as much as possible. That's a difference between this year's tournament and last year's. I think last year you had a couple of teams that were just kind of showing up, going through the motions, not that excited to be there. This year you've got nine teams that all feel like they have a shot. It should make for some very entertaining basketball.
Yeah, and Texas Tech, like you mentioned, I mean, they're obviously not in the field of play or not in the bubble, but they'd seem like a team that could really string some games together, them and West Virginia both, who could to make this tournament real interesting. So that will be something to watch for. Okay, so Thursday we have Iowa State versus K-State, and that is the 11:30 game, the first game. Everyone will be over there at Power and Light, probably at Johnny's, starting to wander into the Sprint Center. That will be a heck of a game to lead off the day, a 4-5. The next game is at 2 o'clock. That's KU versus the winner of Oklahoma State and Texas Tech. I guess before we go too far, I wanted to get everyone's prediction on Oklahoma State, Texas Tech. And Brian, if you don't want to answer, that's fine, since you're calling the game and obviously you have an interest. But feel free to jump in if you'd like. But Andrew, what is your prediction on that game?
Well, this is the Jeff Orr rubber match. I think I'll go with Oklahoma State, just because they're kind of on a tear right now, even though they lost this weekend. But I think that it'll be a close game. I hope it's a close, rough and tumble, you know, wear them out type of game.
Six overtime game?
Right. That's what I want.
And of course, he's saying that because the winner of that game will play Kansas. But okay, so let's move on. I won't put you on the seat there, Brian, but I will put you on the seat for the Iowa State K-State game. Who do you got in that game?
You know, I'll take the clones in this one. The Cats just giving up that home game to Baylor over the weekend. Not exactly trending upward heading into the postseason. Obviously, you know, Bruce Weber is more than capable in this matchup to have his team ready to play. But both clubs will be well represented in the stands, and I'll take Hoiberg's bunch there. I think the top half of this bracket is absolutely where the strength is at, and clearly that's going to be one whale of a first-round game.
Yeah, and you mentioned the top half of the bracket. We're talking about Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, Iowa State, Kansas State, and Kansas, and the bottom half, including Baylor, who actually did, you know, has closed pretty well, TCU, Oklahoma, Texas, and West Virginia. The seeding, how it worked out, really did the one seed no favors whatsoever. Kind of a tough deal. I think most everyone would rather be in the position of Oklahoma instead of where Kansas is. But I guess that's just how it works out. You got to play good teams and you got to beat them in the postseason. So anyway, so if KU, Oklahoma State were to win, then it'd be Kansas, Oklahoma State, or Texas Tech were to win, it'd be Kansas, Texas Tech at that 2 o'clock game. The next game at 6 o'clock would be Oklahoma versus the winner of Baylor, TCU. I assume everybody believes Baylor will win that game. So let's talk Oklahoma, Baylor. I'll start with Brian.
Yeah, that's a tough call. I mean, if Heslop comes out hitting, and if they can use their size in the interior with Austin and Jefferson and Rico Gathers, something that Oklahoma doesn't have much of past Spangler really at all, then I think that clearly Baylor's got a great shot to win this based on the head-to-head physical athleticism differential there in the post. However, with all due respect to both head coaches, I think the coaching edge is clearly on Lon Kruger's side in this one, a veteran that's taken numerous teams to the NCAA tournament. So I like Oklahoma here unless Baylor kills him on the glass. And I just called the game about a week and a half ago when Baylor had 21 offensive rebounds. So you could certainly see that scenario coming to fruition. But that's a definite intriguing matchup. Two NCAA tournament teams, two teams that have some big-time talent. I'll give the coaching edge and thus the overall game edge to OU, though.
Andrew, you got an opinion on that one?
Just I'll take OU. OU beat them twice this year, once close in Waco, and then a bigger blowout game in Norman. I think I'll stick with that. I know Baylor's coming on, but I think that the Sooners will edge them here.
I think I'm going to go with Baylor just to be contrarian, and also just because I think they're really rolling. I mean, that was a great win at K-State. K-State hasn't lost many home games in the Big 12 at all, and that was a big win by Baylor to show some fight on the road in a fairly tough environment. So I'm going to give Baylor the nod there, but I think it will be a very good game, as all these games are going to be on Thursday. If you can get off work, go down to Sprint Center on Thursday. There's four really intriguing games, and the last one we'll talk about is Texas and West Virginia closing out the night at 8:30. Brian, who you got in that game?
Boy, that's a tough call because, again, you have a team with a decided advantage in the post, but you have another team that has terrific guard play, and that team, of course, is West Virginia. Staten, when he's on, is about as good as any point guard in the league, and when Aaron Harris is hitting, now that they have Terry Henderson coming back, I know a lot of your listeners saw just how good they're capable of being, but Texas, with a bevy of bigs from Ridley to eBay, on down the line. They've got so much size they can throw at you. They're getting Jonathan Holmes back coming off of his injury. And Isaiah Taylor, to me, is the key. If there's not a huge discrepancy in the point guard play between Staten and Taylor, then I think Texas holds serve and wins this one as their seeding would expect them to, because I think they'll beat them up on the boards. It's the number one rebounding team, an average of 42 per game. They were tied heading into the weekend with Baylor for the top rebound margin. And I think that's where they win this game when it's all said and done. So so long as they don't get exposed to the point, I don't think they will, because Taylor had a really good season. I'll go with Texas, but clearly, you know, much like some of these other teams that can shoot the three, West Virginia has the potent firepower from the perimeter to upset just about anybody, as we saw yesterday or Saturday in the Big 12 Conference. So that'll be an intriguing one as well for sure, but I'll take the chalk as well.
Who you got, Andrew?
I'm going the same way.
All right.
Going Texas. Same deal. I mean, they've got the advantage. They exploited that advantage twice this season. As much as I'd like to give ourselves a little bit of credit for and have West Virginia lose here or win here, got to go with Texas.
All right. Well, let's fast forward through the semifinals games, because there's obviously we each have different picks. Be tough to go through the bracket. But Brian, who you got? Just kind of and certainly if you want to dodge the question with being a Texas Tech, we understand. But who you got in the finals, and who you got as your champion in the Big 12?
Well, I appreciate that. And obviously, you know, when you call one of the games, you try to plead the fifth on matchups you might be calling. But I would say if you look at it, the overall history of the event, obviously, overwhelmingly, Kansas is the favorite here. You take a look at the 17 all-time Big 12 tournaments, and Kansas with 9 wins, so they've won it more than half the time. They have a 90% winning percentage when they get to the title game. They have an 81% winning percentage overall in the event, 30-7 all time. They have a guy that could have been coach of the year in the league, and they have somewhat of a home court advantage there. And so for all those reasons, that's a high percentage pick, and I think a good one, obviously, depending on the health of Joel Embiid. And I do think they got a tough draw with both their quarterfinal matchup and a potential semifinal matchup. If they get to that point, clearly the tougher half of the bracket is the top half of the bracket. So, you know, clearly their work is cut out for them. But for all those reasons I mentioned historically and Bill Self's track record within this event, the talent and what we saw over the course of an 18-game slate, it makes perfect sense to look at them as the favorite. Coming out of the bottom half, you know, Oklahoma, Texas, West Virginia, any of those teams could be there. And I suppose Baylor could, too. They've made runs in this thing before. I think back to Oklahoma City and a run they made down there. But just based on the fact that the Oklahoma-Baylor matchup could truly go either way, maybe the safer pick in terms of trying to forecast who makes it all the way to Saturday out of the bottom half would be Texas, just to kind of hedge my bets a little bit there. We've seen some epic Kansas versus Texas Big 12 title game matchups before. I remember one when it was 50-50 at the half, 45-45 at the half, when Rush and Chalmers were throwing in shots and Augustine on the other end. maybe we'll see something similar this week. But in terms of actual predictions, maybe I should steer clear of that. But there's a historical perspective for you on how it's gone over the last 20 years or so.
Well, that's fair. We will take that answer. And Brian, I know you need to run, so we're going to let you out of there on that one. Certainly, we appreciate you joining us once again, and everyone can listen to your work with the Texas Tech Red Raiders. And certainly, we can also read your work. Remind me of the website one more time.
Well, I did some writing in season for the Rivals Network there, specifically with Texas Tech. That's all done now that the regular season's over, but I appreciate the plug. And folks can hear some of my work for the Texas Tech Sports Network on my website, brianhaney.com.
There it is.
Thanks for the plug there. And Andrew, Kevin, always a pleasure talking to my friends back home. And I can't wait to see all you guys in Kansas City. It's one of the best events we have in terms of conference tournaments because of the passion of college hoops within this region of the country, the College Basketball Hall of Fame right there at the Sprint Center. So as tournament week begins and you got these things going on all around the country, I think we got the best one right here in Kansas City, and can't wait to see you guys at it.
Absolutely. We will catch up with you then.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks so much, guys.
Take care.
See ya.
We are back. Thanks again to Brian Haney for joining us. And be sure to follow him on Twitter at B Haney. That's B-H-A-N-N-I. Let's wrap up with our predictions here, Andrew. Who do you have on the finals on Friday night? I'm sorry, who do you have on Saturday night in the game? The two teams that are going to be there for the chance to hoist the trophy.
I'm going to go KU versus Texas, just like old times the past 10 years or so. We've had some epic battles against the Longhorns in the conference tournament finals. That's what I think, and I think the Jayhawks pull out a victory.
I don't know what to think of this tournament. I know that KU has a really hard path, and if Embiid's not playing, I don't know that I feel great about us getting there to Saturday. It's just kind of the way I'm feeling right now. I think it's possibly the 1-2 start to the March, but at the same time, you know, we will be favored in every game. I feel, you know, obviously great about the way that Wiggins is playing, but you know, just to be a KU fan, I'll say that KU makes it there. And I too feel like Texas has a great chance, but at the same time, I'm kind of thinking Baylor makes a run, and I don't know why. I have nothing to back this up whatsoever other than whenever I just think Baylor's down and out, they seem to do something to make me interested again in their team. They have all the talent in the world, and I think their path really is not too tough. I think they can get through Oklahoma. I think they can get through Texas or West Virginia, whoever's there, making it an interesting path to playing on Saturday, and I think KU could certainly take Baylor if that is the matchup. I would love getting a chance at Oklahoma State, K-State, or Iowa State and Baylor being our path to the championship. That'd be a lot of fun. Certainly, like I said, though, they didn't do us a whole lot of favors in this seeding. Let's talk a few storylines or what to watch for in the Big 12 tournament. Obviously, number one, we just talked about Embiid's health. Like I said, are you interested in him being there if he's healthy? I mean, do you think they should limit his minutes? Or do you have any thoughts at all about Embiid's health?
I think the main priority needs to be the NCAA tournament, not the Big 12 tournament. But if everything being equal, I'd rather he played this week to get, you know, to get ready for it, to get him, you know, not being rusty when that tournament hits. Yeah. I'd rather see him play. You know, and none of these games are going to be easy. Usually, sometimes the Thursday game, kind of a pushover. Not going to be the case this year. Yeah. So going to need him all the way through. Hopefully we can make that happen. Let's talk about the next thing. To make the tournament, Texas Tech or West Virginia need to run the table. Or let's just talk generally. A Big 12 team playing on the first day has never won the tournament. So a 7-10 has never won the tournament. Will that change this year? Or is this the most likely year that happens?
There is a legitimate chance that a 7-8 is playing in the championship this year. I mean, Baylor OSU could be there. It's crazy that these teams are such low seeded and have obviously come on late. So I think it is. I think there's a very good chance, at least a better chance than any year we've had before, at least in, since the Big 12 started. So I think this could be that year. Hopefully it's not, though. I think that both of these teams certainly have the ability to do so, though. What about Oklahoma State's resurgence? Or is this something that KU fans need to worry about? I mean, they're playing way better than they have maybe all season right now. Obviously, they're coming off a loss with Iowa State, but that's a tough place to win. Are you afraid of this game at all?
Not necessarily afraid, but I mean, at this point in the year, you got to beat everybody who's in front of you. It's definitely one of the tougher matchups that we'll see, that anybody as a 1 versus an 8 will see. So I'm not afraid. I want to see this team again. I want to kind of redeem ourselves from last weekend, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough one.
I personally think it's the toughest game we'll play at this, in this tournament, if we win, between, you know, the remaining teams that we would have to face, whether it's Iowa State, K-State, or someone in the bottom of the bracket. I think this game is the hardest one. And if we win this game, I'll feel pretty good about our chances to get there to Saturday. But very scary game. You know, the good news is we got Oklahoma State pretty good at Allen Fieldhouse, and we had them down 10 at their place. So you got to think that, you know, the matchups and everything else still favor us. Like Brian mentioned, their front line is not really too strong, and we will hopefully have the advantage there if Embiid is back. So something to watch for there. What about KU's race, Andrew, to potentially be the first 8-loss team with a 1 seed? Do you think there's any chance that that happens if we win out?
I think there's a small chance. Some things have to go our way. Some teams in front of us have to lose some games. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen this year with KU. But I think we're more likely to be a number 2, but it just kind of depends on how the committee is going to reward, you know, our top 50 wins and our strength of schedule. So who knows, but if it's going to happen, it'll be this Kansas team that does it.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think it's going to happen. We'll certainly have to need some things to happen. Wichita State won today, and that makes them probably a very guaranteed 1 seed. You got Florida up there as well, and Arizona probably as well, even with their loss. So you're looking at 1 chance, and there's a lot of contenders there. So I'm not feeling great about a 1 seed, but at the same time, a 2 seed in the Midwest or a 2 seed in a on the S curve could end up being a better spot for Kansas. Well, what do you say we get out of here, Andrew? Certainly want to thank Brian once again for joining us. Very cool of him to come on and help us preview. And also want to thank Johnny's for sponsoring the podcast. I should note that down at the P&L, their hours will be a little bit different during the tournament. So note that on Wednesday, they open at 10:30 in the morning. So you can get there early, have some lunch, stay there all day, and go in for that 6 o'clock matchup, Oklahoma State and Texas Tech. And on Thursday, they open at 8 a.m. So plenty of time to grab some drinks in the morning and then head over to Sprint Center for that 11:30 game. On Friday, they open at 10:30. So plenty of time again to get in there, have several drinks before the 6 p.m. matchups. Hopefully Kansas will be playing there. And on Saturday, they open at 10:30 as well. So just wanted to give them a quick shout out. Thank you so much to Johnny's. We will be down there at least for Thursday and hopefully Friday, Saturday, if we are playing. So give us a shout. Like I said, holler us on Twitter. We will be down there. You can come hang out with us. We'll drink a beer, toast to KU, hopefully winning on Thursday, hopefully winning Friday, and winning the whole thing Saturday. Andrew, do you have anything else to add before we get out of here on the first postseason podcast of 2014?
Well, the Big 12 tournament's one of my favorite sporting events of the year. We'll definitely be down there having a lot of fun. So send us a Twitter message or Twitter something. Meet up with us down there. I think it'll be a good time.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Hopefully it turns out to be a great weekend. Thanks all for listening. We will catch you next time in Rock Chalk. I tried to tell them that they should never let us in. They say that we the best, but I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us. They know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel. They know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real.
Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Uh-huh, yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks,
this
baby.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby.
All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing. And look how Bill got us steering, all them tournaments appearing with no team that's interfering. Nine times get to cheering with them banners held high and the crowd going wild. Night before the Final Four, you can't even sleep now. Yeah, we at the peak now, we can't even leap down. March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court, so we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together, but win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man, but one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan.
I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you-